Howdy, crew, and welcome to the Profundity Podcast, a podcast hosted by me, Andrew Ripple, a human who says words when the words won't come. Sure, that's a thing. Sure, yeah, whatever. Why not? C'est la vie. This is just whatever, you know. It's what it is. It's what it is. It's how you do. It's how you say tomato tomato. Yep. That's the juice that we're going. The juice is loose. Fun fact, apparently, when I was very young, I was around, there was the O.J. Simpson trial, happened when I was young, and had only just recently started learning how to talk, and so I could say words, I could say phrases and stuff like that, but it was much more of a, like, scattered communication, and there's terms for the actual... I took a developmental psychology class a couple years ago, so I should know the actual terms for the phases of speech acquisition and language acquisition in infants, but I don't. Although, weirdly, that class in particular, I don't know why, as soon as I finished the class, I forgot almost all of the actual specific details of the class. I sort of took overarching message that there are phases that infants pass through, and, you know, there's a lot of variation within that trajectory, but there's a relatively normal trajectory that most people pass through, and it is just a developmental cycle, not cycle, but a developmental pathway. That sort of overarching message, I definitely took away from it, but, like, all the specific details, I forgot it within, like, 5 minutes of the final, which, you know, pouring out, because that was actually a very interesting class, and I liked it a lot. Anyway, when I was in whatever phase it was that happened when the O.J. Simpson trial happened, my parents went off and did something, and I was being babysat by my uncle. And my uncle was very much in the team O.J.'s innocent camp, and he decided to, according to my parents, upon their return, I had learned a new phrase, namely, don't squeeze the juice, free O.J. And now, this is an interesting little query. I am not someone who has any... yes, I did just tell you that story, so fine, whatever. But I'm not someone that has any desire or interest to think about myself as a youth. I'm very, like... Which is weird for how nostalgic of a person I am, but I'm nostalgic for particular times that, like, I'm okay that middle school and elementary school and younger have just, like, flown by the wind. I'm fine with that. I never enjoy hearing stories about myself as a child. I always, like, smile to be polite and stuff like that, but, like, inside I'm saying, okay, finish the story, let's move on to something that people should give a shit about, namely not me as a child. And I don't know why, which is, again, very weird, because I am a sort of very nostalgic person, but I don't know. My nostalgia, though, also, to an extent... I very much like to live in gaps of around 4 or 5 years. Like, that is what I think of as my past. And then anything beyond that starts to, like, selectively fade in and out a little bit. Though this has been the one test of that, in that high school, because, well, high school is just categorically better than college. So, like, I do harbor some very wonderful, like, memories and rose-tinted glasses views of the high school experience. But, and so that's more than, you know, that's a 4 years after these past 4 years, or the most, you know, words, man, who even needs them? Who even says them? Don't squeeze the juice, free OJ. So that's odd. So I do, I guess, have an 8 year barrier or so. Holy shit. High school started less than 8 years ago, but no, wow. And then I'm going to be an adult. Then I'm going to be an adult doing adult things and living adult life. And that was I don't know. It was neither a negative nor a positive one. So whatever. This is just, you just got to take the good. You got to take the bad. Everywhere you look, everywhere you go, it's a heart to hold on to, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know how the song goes. I'm sorry, Carly. I don't know how the song goes, because I just know the everywhere you look, da 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 da. That's all I know, but I know the everywhere you look bit. And also the whatever happened to predictability blah, 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 blah. Whatever happened to predictability, the milkman, the paperboy, the evening TV, something, something, something. And that's all I know. So, sorry, Carl. Sorry, Carl. Couldn't do it. Can't do it for you. Cannot go for you, Carl. I also, interesting, I had not rewatched the Harley and Ivy episode of Batman, the animated series, in decades, probably. And I always like to call Harley Quinn Harl in my head, and when I'm talking out loud to my Tumblr dashboard, because Harley Quinn's the best. And have I told you, internet, about the insane visceral reaction that I got to seeing the first Suicide Squad trailer? If not, as a quick little recap, excuse me. See, this is where having a great cough button would be handy, but then you'd hear like a weird moment of silence or whatever. Realistically, this is where editing would come in handy. But I watched the first Suicide Squad trailer, these many months ago when it came out, and just had such a visceral, like, almost tears welling in my eyes reaction to seeing Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn on my screen, on my laptop screen, and it was entirely, like, I did not expect that to happen. I was like, oh, Suicide Squad, this will be fun. And I watched it, and just, like, this character that is so burned into my psyche as one of my, like, favorite things in all of pop culture, existent as a person on screen, and I lost my shit about that. And so I love Harley Quinn is the moral story. I'm super, 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 super invested in Harley Quinn as a character. For anyone that doesn't know, I suppose, maybe I should describe it. Harley Quinn is a character from the Batman mythology. She actually was introduced in the television show Batman the Animated Series, which, to my mind, I will go to bat for. That is my, like, the two definitive versions in my head of Batman are Batman the Animated Series and then the Batman Arkham games, actually. I think do a very, very, very good job, to an extent. Not all of the design, excuse me, not all of the design totally floats my boat, namely a lot of the female characters. Sorry, designers, but, like, clothes. Especially Poison Ivy. I hate Poison Ivy's design in the Batman games. Though I like her performance and I like her portrayal, so whatever. And I like some of the stuff that's done with her as a character, especially in Arkham Knight. But especially Batman the Animated Series is like, was a TV show in the 90s, and that is sort of exactly the crystallization of what I think Batman is. And so I grew up as not a fan of comic books at all. I didn't read comic books, and I didn't really get that into superhero stuff all that, to be totally honest, but I was a huge, 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 huge Batman fan. I watched all of the Batman movies. The first Batman thing that I can ever actually remember watching was the Batman and Robin movie, which I still holds a soft spot for me. Like, it's bad. It's bad, 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 bad. But it's the one with Mr. Freeze, Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze, and George Clooney as Batman. And it's garbage, and it ruined Batman on the screen for, like, almost a decade until Christopher Nolan came back and was like, yeah, we'll do Batman different now. I love the Nolan movies, by the way. But I loved the Batman animated TV show and sort of forgot how much I loved it until high school, sort of, was when, with a friend of mine, a friend Joe, who we played in a band together, was also a big fan of both the Batman and Superman animated TV shows. I never watched the Superman or the Justice League ones that were all in sort of the same universe and the same Bruce Timm art style. But Batman the animated series, I adored, and the character of Harley Quinn is actually one of the handful of characters. There are two major characters that were created on the television show that made the transition back into comics and then into film and stuff like that, and that is the character of Renee Montoya, who's a cop in the GCPD, and the character of Harley Quinn. And Harley Quinn is the Joker's female sidekick. She's Dr. Harleen Quinzel, who is a psychiatrist at Arkham Asylum, which is where all the crazy bad guys get locked up in the Batman universe. And she falls in love with the Joker, and the Joker manipulates her, and then she turns into his psycho sidekick, Harley Quinn. And I fucking love Harley Quinn beyond measure, beyond belief. She's just such a bubbly, fun personality, and she's silly, she's goofy, she has a, like, crazy Brooklyn accent, maybe not Brooklyn, I don't know, but East Coast-y accent, and is just, oh, she's the best, and she's adorable and bubbly and cute and wields bats, and has pet hyenas, and she's just great, man. She's great. Harley Quinn's wonderful. Mr. Freeze is the other one that, like, was not created for the television show. Mr. Freeze was totally a B-C-level freeze gun, freeze ray villain in the Batman comics. But they, in the TV show, completely rewrote his origin story and made him a very tragic character that is the origin story that has been used in comics and movies and video games ever since. That he is was a brilliant researcher whose wife got an, Nora got an incurable disease, and then went, he decided to, there are permutations on this, but basically use his research into cryogenics and stuff like that to figure out how to freeze her for until such time when she could be cured, a cure could be found, and then in some versions turn, usually the, I don't remember the exact version that happens in the comic, or in the TV show, but it's, yeah, something along the lines of, depending on the version, he turns to crime to start funding this in order to, like, keep stuff alive, keep her alive, or turns to crime to, like, steal bits for the cures and whatnot, and then she dies, usually in some confrontation with Batman. Batman is stopping, and then that also, like, gets him all cryogenically fucked up so that he can only survive in sub-zero temperatures, so he builds himself a freeze suit and a freeze gun and goes fucking Mr. Freeze and everything. And that story was, like, made him into a really cool villain character, and they used that forever. Because it's the similar thing that almost all the great Batman villains, or the ones that, like, stand the test of time and rise up, have some twisted, warped mirror of an aspect of Batman's personality or Batman's mythos. That you have Two-Face is great because he has that idea of, like, dual identity, and reflects that back at Batman. Scarecrow is great because Batman uses fear as one of his primary weapons, and so does Scarecrow. Mr. Freeze has, the new version of Mr. Freeze, is motivated by love for a family member and the death of a family member, and either to try and save them, or if the backstory is that Batman is responsible, at least indirectly, for his wife's death, and defreezing and stuff like that, then it's a revenge thing, in the same way that Batman is getting revenge for the death of his parents. And it's wonderful, it's wonderful. Although, now that I think about it, Harley, she's actually one of the rare big league villains that does not have some sort of mirror to Batman in some interesting way. Huh. I'll have to think about that. What I was going to say, leaving way eons back, is that I rewatched one of the best episodes of the Batman animated series show, which is called Harley and Ivy. And what happens is that Harley Quinn gets kicked out by the Joker, because the Joker is a horrifically abusive monster of a boyfriend, and then decides, you know what, I'm going to go strike it on my own. Over the course of a heist, runs into Poison Ivy, and then they, like, team up to escape together, and then decide, hey, you know what, we're going to be a total team-up crew, and they go on a crime rampage, and it's wonderful. And Poison Ivy calls Harley Harl, and I'm like, hey, that's the same thing that I say to my Tumblr dashboard, so that's great. And then and Harley calls Ivy Red, and it's adorable, and I 1,000,000% ship them. And according to Paul Dini, the creator, that, like, yeah, no, that's totally canon. There's a reason why it's a kids show, so whatever, but there's a reason why you see them, like, they finish a heist, and then the next thing you see them is the next morning in Ivy's kitchen, and they're both wearing t-shirts, oversized t-shirts, and no pants, because guess what, Harley and Ivy, that's a thing. And then it's been, like, further canonized, I think, in comics later on, that, like, yeah, no, totally, they have a legitimate, like, yes, relationship, and it's great. There is no ship that I ship more than Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy, and it's so great because, like, they bring out the best in each other, and I just love it. I love it, guys. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. But yeah, Harley Quinn. I love Harley. I love Harl. I love my Harl. She's the best. She's the best. And I also love Poison Ivy. Poison Ivy's great, too. But yeah, No, I'm interested to see how the Suicide Squad movie goes. I think that it could be lovely and wonderful. I think it could be lovely and wonderful. It could also be terrible. So, who knows? Who knows? Whatever. But the fact that they're making a Suicide Squad movie is awesome. Like, that in and of itself is great. Like, that is the perfect example of where the DC tone could work out fine to an extent, is that they're staying in the grim, they're staying in the gritty, but they're being a little lighter and sillier with it. And the fact that, you know, these are the kinds of movies that I want DC to make more of, that... there is a certain type of tone to go for with your, you know, the main difference. There's several sort of differences between DC and Marvel as comics properties, but one of which is that, yes, while cities like New York and stuff exist in the DC universe, DC much more it takes place in Gotham City, Metropolis, stuff like that, whereas Marvel takes place in New York City and Washington, D.C., and, like, real-life places. I think someone... It might have been Stan Lee, but it could also have been someone else. I think I heard him on, like, the Nerdist podcast. Maybe it was Stan Lee, but it was someone that was familiar with Marvel and worked with Marvel. Maybe, like, Paul Feig or something like that. Not Paul Feig. Kevin Feige. Paul Feig is the guy that did Bridesmaids, stuff like that. Kevin Feige is the head producer, whatever his actual title is, executive producer of the Marvel film studio. But someone said that they always thought growing up that the characters in the Marvel Universe probably read DC comics, and that DC feels like one step removed, whereas Marvel feels like it takes place in our world. Obviously, it doesn't, because it's still comics, fine, whatever, but whereas DC is sort of one for the step removed from that. The other sort of major tonal difference that I see, and a lot of other people have said, so I'm not coming up with anything new, is that... Oh, you can hear a telephone going up in the distance. Am I going to answer it? See, this is the problem, because if I pause it, I can't pause on this recorder. I can only stop the recording, and I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. You know what? Nope, I'm not going to do it. But if it rings again in the next minute or so, then fine, I will. And then I'll have to edit, and then I'll have to splice, and blah, 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 blah. That the DC... the DC universe is much more of, like, a Greek gods kind of thing. That's sort of the types of stories and the types of tone that they tend to have, is that you have the Justice League. And a lot of it is, if you compare, like, Justice League to the Avengers, is that the Justice League is Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, The Flash. These, like, a lot of them are actually kind of based on Greek gods. Aquaman and The Flash, certainly, and Wonder Woman all have, like, pretty clear connections back to aspects of Greek mythology. And it is this Mount Olympus pantheon that is sort of the way that it works out. It's big epic stories that, yes, have human foibles because it's Greek gods and stuff like that, but, like, that's kind of the thing that you have. And then around the periphery, you have all these other, like, branching out much more human-y stories, whereas the Avengers is much more, it's a bunch of, like, it's Iron Man and Captain America, and it's much more, like, random and hardscrabble and bizarro team of fuck-ups. Which is interesting, and leads to a different tone. And the movies on DC's side, a lot of people have complained about it, but I will say one thing that I've got for them is, like, they are taking that tone and running with it. These are Greek gods fighting. This is Wonder Woman and Superman and Batman, like, going at it and going for it and, like, saving the world against evil. And that's what it feels like in a way that the Marvel movies don't. Like, even Thor is certainly keeps that godlike mentality, to be sure. But, but what's cool then is that, yes, that is the main DC thrust, is this big, epic, important storytelling. And then the fact that they chose as, like, so here are the DC Cinematic Universe movies that are coming out, is that we have Man of Steel is the first one, then Batman vs. Superman, then Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad is coming out of the gate with a weirdo movie. They're coming out of the gate with a weirdo movie. That's awesome. I'm super into that. I'm a huge fan of that idea. And so Suicide Squad, if you probably watch the trailers, but it's this idea that, like, it's a bunch of villains, and especially B-list villains. Like, Harley Quinn is far and away the one majorly recognizable name among that team. But even then, it's Harley Quinn. It's not the Joker. In terms of, like, Batman recognizability. And she's also new. She's, like, 20 years old as a character. And that's one of the first movies they're doing is Suicide Squad. And that has me super jazzed. Now, of course, they might fuck it up. But, and there is an element, especially in the latest trailer, there's a definite element of trying way too hard. They're trying way too hard to be the Hot Topic mess, and be quirky and stuff like that. That being said, I am a huge fan of Hot Topic campiness, so, like, even if they're trying too hard, even if they're trying way too hard to nail that tone and then do nail that tone, like, I can understand a lot of people hating it, but I'll be super into it, regardless. I'm totally here for a Hot Topic, supervillain movie, whatever. The fact that we're finally getting Harley Quinn on the screen. Oh my goodness gracious, I can't even begin to express the joy and the wonder and the love that I feel towards that fictional, mostly cartoon character. It's weird, it's bonkers, it's crazy. It led to the fact that around the internet a few years ago, a bunch of Bruce Timm, who's the guy that created the Batman animated series and did his art style, is the one for all the characters, and all the character designs are very much in his very distinct and noticeable drawing style. It led to the fact that when a few years ago a collection of various pinup drawings that he had done as sketches came around the internet of characters, including your Poison Ivy's and your Harley Quinn's, characters who I saw when I was young and impressionable and had a nice imprinting on the brain. Seeing them in various states of undress was a interestingly moment where that forced one to take stock of values that one had thought they had held dear and held constant. But Batman's great. There's a podcast that I've been listening to for, I think it's about is it a year old or is it 2 years old? Called Batman the Animated Podcast. It's hosted by a guy, Justin Michael, I think. Justin Roiland is the guy that created Rick and Morty. Rick and Morty, great show. But the show is a episode-by-episode discussion of Batman the Animated Series. And each episode, it's crazy, because each episode of the show is, like, 20 minutes long. Each episode of the podcast is, like, 2 hours. Between an hour and 2 hours. And half the episode is Justin talking to a fan of the show that is usually a comedian friend of his, and the other half is him talking to someone who was involved in the show, which has been fascinating. It's been really cool. As someone like me that's a big fan of it, it's like, we're talking to everyone that's been involved. We got to talk to Paul Dini, who's the guy who created Harley Quinn and was one of the writers and one of the co-creators, I think one of the co-creators of the show, but certainly one of the, like, hefty writers. He's the one who rewrote Mr. Freeze's backstory. He's the one who created Harley Quinn, wrote a lot of the major Harley Quinn episodes. We get to talk to Kevin Conroy, who's the guy who voices Batman. Arlene Sorkin, who voices Harley Quinn. I don't know if they've talked to Mark Hamill. I don't think they talked to Mark Hamill, who does the Joker. But it's, you know, Maurice LaMarche, people that have... Andrea Romano, who is the voice director and the voice casting person, and is responsible for creating this, like, fantastic voice cast of people. And it warms the cockles of my Batman the Animated Series nerd heart that someone did it. And I will say, like, 3 or 4 years ago, I had the idea of, like, oh, someone should do an episode-by-episode, like, re-watch of Batman the Animated Series, and then, with a friend, chat about the show. This Batman the Animated Podcast is a far better version of anything that I would have come up with, but there was part of me that was like, hey, look, my idea was vindicated and done by someone else and done better than me, so that was exciting. Batman's great, y'all. I did mention the Arkham games are the other thing that feels like... Yes, they are sort of different in style and definitely different in tone than the animated series. They're much, 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 much darker because they're not a kids' show. It's made for grown-ups, and they take more from, like, the grittier and crazier comic stuff. But, like, I really love the Batman Arkham games. I never played Arkham Origins, I think. And they all have some problems with them. That makes me so furious because Arkham Knight, story-wise and game-wise, is perfect. Almost. It's very close to perfect. The two problems that I have with it, number one is Poison Ivy's costume. I don't like Poison Ivy's costume in the Arkham games. Whatever. It's just, meh. Not a fan. But that's admittedly minor compared to the real problem, which is the fucking Batmobile missions are awful. Oh my god. there are like these Batmobile tank missions that take up so much of the game and they suck and they are no fun and we just have to keep doing them over and over and over and over and over again. And if you removed those, it would be a perfect game, and story-wise, like, it would be one of my favorite Batman stories ever. Partially because it's very inspired by one of my favorite Batman stories ever, which is responsible for what might be my favorite Batman movie ever, which is, if you haven't played Arkham Knight, it's been out for a while, and you probably won't, but, this is not super a spoiler because it would require you to have not played Arkham Knight, but also have read this comic or seen this movie, but regardless, okay, I'm going to go for it. What I think is my favorite Batman movie ever is the animated straight-to-DVD movie of Batman Under the Red Hood. And I will just say that Batman Arkham Knight draws quite heavily from that story arc, which was, the movie is an adaptation of a graphic novel of by the same name that came out in like 2005. The movie came out in 2010 or 11, I think, and the game came out last year. So not an exact adaptation. It just draws quite heavily. Aspects of the story of Arkham Knight draw quite heavily from aspects of that story. But it's, yeah, I love it. I will say a huge part of the reason why Arkham Knight also feels like, or the Arkham series especially, feels like a continuation of the Batman the Animated Series things is, guess who they got for voicing Batman? Kevin Conroy from Batman the Animated Series. Guess they got voicing the Joker, Mark Hamill from Batman the Animated Series. They don't have Arlene Sorkin doing the voice of Harley Quinn, but they have Tara Strong doing doing the same voice, the Arlene Sorkin voice for Harley. So that's, I think the fact that the voice cast is the same, makes it work pretty well. I do love the Joker design in the Arkham games. It's great. And I love the Harley design because there is the option of wearing the full-on Harlequin costume that she wears in the comics and in the TV show, is a skin that you can download and that I managed to get for Arkham Knight. And there's a Harley Quinn mission that you could play, which I did. When she's wearing, like, I love that costume. I don't love her real costume in the game. Fine. I mean, it's fine, but whatever. It varies from game to game. But the like fun DLC Harley Quinn mission that I get to download as a special addition to Arkham Knight is, guess what it is? It's Harley Quinn going to Bloodhaven to break Poison Ivy out of jail. I love it. And it's like, oh my, it's Harley going to rescue Ivy. And I love it because Harley and Ivy is the ship to end all ships. It is a ship on which I will set sail into the sunset, and a ship on which I will leave you all to set sail into the sunset. Watch Batman the Animated Series, man. It's great. Play the Arkham games. They're great. It's got me really excited. So in Arkham Knight, especially, they talk a whole lot. The developer, Rocksteady, has said this is the last Arkham game they're going to make, last Batman game they're going to make. And I'm like, you know, that's good, because this is a perfect ending for the Arkham series. But they talk a whole hell of a lot about Superman. Like, Superman is mentioned. So one of the key features of the Arkham game is that, like, you're patrolling around as Batman and you can listen in and hear what various criminals on the street and stuff are saying and the conversations that they're having and discussing, which is always a fun moment, a fun part of the game. And sometimes gives you clues and stuff like that. But it also just provides a lot of color. And a whole lot of them are talking about Superman and talking about Metropolis and stuff like that, which I really, really desperately hope is some sign that maybe Rocksteady is done with Arkham. Maybe they'll try their hand at a Superman game, because that could be really interesting to see how they change up the formula and what they might do with Superman. So there's that. That's a thought to also leave you on. Moral of the story, Harley's great. Moral of the story, Ivy's great, but Harley's great. And I love Harlequin more than life itself. And that's, you know what? The fact that it's a cartoon character, who cares? Who cares? That's fine. That's fine by me. Don't squeeze the juice, free OJ. Oh yeah, watch The People vs. OJ Simpson. I just watched this past week's episode of it, which is not the week of when this is going to come out, but it was good because the show is great and it's the best show on TV at the moment. So if a glove don't fit, you must acquit.